Do you have an electrical issue you need to fix? It's time to ask the electrician as part of our home improvement series on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You know, we've tried to upgrade our 60s home to LED lighting to save energy. The LEDs, they last longer, they stay cool, and electricians turned us on to these energy-efficient little puck lights. They're such a space saver and give us light in exactly the places we need it. What electrical issues have you had in your home? How old is your home, and have these problems been fixed? It's 800-642-1234. Joe Gatewood owns Gatewood Electric. It's based in Willmar, Minnesota. That's west of the Twin Cities. He's past president of the Electric Association in Minnesota. Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much, Kate. I'm glad to be here.
Well, good morning. What are some of the most common electrical projects or issues that customers are calling you on for?
Well, with the LED craze, lighting is fun again for the electrician.
What do you mean by that?
That LEDs are such a cool operating light fixture. A diode consumes about 1/7 of the electricity that the typical incandescent or halogen lights used to, and they operate at such a cool temperature that in the summer times they don't elevate the heat within the home, making the air conditioner work harder. On the other side, in the winter, LEDs don't add any extra heat to heat our homes up.
Yeah, so you're really seeing your customers changing over from those incandescent bulbs to the LEDs.
That's correct. You know, the LED bulbs are available on all the stores shelves, but there are so many choices and so many colors to choose from that choosing the wrong LED can really take away from the appeal of a person's skin, the clothes, even the color of food. If you go to the local meat market and look inside at the steaks that are on display for purchase, those steaks look very robust. They're dark red and the white fat veins pop out at you, making that steak look so delicious. But they're under a deep red rendition light, whether it's LED or incandescent. When that steak gets pulled out of the meat cooler and it gets into fluorescent light or even the wrong LED light, the steak looks as though it's aged about 2 weeks. It's a gray color and the fat lines aren't as prominent. And it's all in effect from the type of light that's in the room.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you said this too, but it's so hard to know what light to choose. There are so many of these LEDs on the market. How do you go about knowing what light is right for your situation?
Well, we have a new language in the electrical lighting industry now. We don't talk about watts as much as we used to when dealing with incandescent lighting. We talk about lumens and Kelvin. Kelvin with a K is the color of the light that comes out of artificial illumination. And with LEDs, we have choices of the Kelvin of light bulbs that we're going to choose. The lower the number of Kelvin indicates the more yellow or red rendition color that light will provide. We like to stick around 3,000 Kelvin for residential purposes because it's a warm light. It's not too red or yellow, which a 2,700 Kelvin bulb would offer. When we get up to the 4,000 Kelvin level, we're talking more of a cool white like an office light would want. If we get up to the 5,000, 6,000 Kelvin, we're talking street lighting, almost that bluish light that some new beautiful headlights have. And it washes away color. It's more of a purposeful light instead of fashionable light.
Okay, yeah. You know, sometimes electrical problems in homes, they're hidden behind the walls. How much can you diagnose over the phone with your customers?
Well, it's always better to have hands-on and eyes-on to troubleshoot a problem. You're right. Wiring is concealed in the walls, and it usually doesn't present itself until there is a problem. Hopefully it's not in the form of a fire. But since wires are concealed, the hope is that the wires were inspected by a third party before any type of wiring is concealed. And in many states that enforce the National Electrical Code, new wiring is to be inspected before it's covered up with sheetrock or paneling or even insulation. with the hope that all of the circuit breakers and fuses are sized accurately so that too much electricity won't pass along a concealed wire, allowing it to overheat.
Yeah, and because that can easily start an electrical fire, or, you know, you might even just trip a wire, I would suppose.
That's true. Fires still are created by electrical systems in houses and in all buildings, and the electrician's job is to accurately size the circular mills or the girth of a wire and then protect it accurately with fuses, circuit breakers for overload and overcurrent, short circuit protection.
Yeah. We're talking with Joe Gatewood, our electrical expert this hour, as part of our Ask a Contractor series, former president of the Minnesota Electric Association. You can join in with your questions about, you know, whether it's LEDs, other questions about your electrical situations. Are you looking to get help installing a light fixture, maybe a ceiling fan? 800-642-1234. We heard from Jerry in Viola, called in, couldn't stay with us. Jerry is building a new house, Joe, owns a Tesla, wonders if his power goes out, can he use his Tesla battery to power his house?
Yes, he sure can. There are huge strides taking effect in the electrical world with the electrical vehicles. Electrical vehicles not only need to be charged so that they can travel on the roadways, there are power walls now that are available so that if a house were to lose its utility power or shore power, there is a reverter that can make the car a reverse power source. You're actually plugging your house into your car then and converting that DC electricity stored inside of the car's batteries to be converted into AC electric power for use in the house. It's very limited. It won't run the air conditioner or the oven or the water heater, but it could keep a refrigerator running to stay cool and maybe a few lights on for safety until the utility can bring power back to the house.
Okay. And so this is very possible with these electric vehicles.
Very possible, but very complex. Mm-hmm. And there's still the risk of fire or electrocution. So there really needs to be some rules followed, not only by the manufacturer, but also for state and local codes, and of course the national electrical code.
So, you know, you mentioned here electric car charging. You know, that's going to become a much greater issue here as people buy e-vehicles, especially with older homes and charging at home. What is the right update to circuit breakers?
For the household electrical panel itself, 200 amps of electrical capacity at 120/240 volts is the most common installation for modern houses. For the individual electric vehicles, that has a wider range. Some vehicles can trickle charge at 120 volts on a 20-amp rated circuit. But I use the word trickle there because it might take all night for that car to get fully charged. Other vehicles might be able to be ranged as to what type of voltage and ampacity is chosen for their charging. Say a 50-amp, 240-volt circuit. That could charge some cars in about 3 hours. So depending on the car that's chosen, can often dictate what size minimum car charging circuit should be installed.
But at a minimum, you should probably have that information if you are going to buy an electric vehicle to really see where your circuit breaker is at.
That's absolutely correct, Kate. The National Electrical Code tried to make it mandatory on all new homes built back in 2017 to have an electrical car charging circuit installed in the garage. The problem with that and the reason why it was voted down and not installed as mandatory language is that because there are different vehicles that take and require different circuits. So it's up to the homeowner and the car they choose as to what the minimum size car charging circuit would be installed.
We're talking with electrician Joe Gatewood, tackling common electrical problems and projects around the house. Do you have a fuse box? Have you ever had a power outage? Does that happen a lot? How old is your home? Have you bought a new house? What's the electrical system like? Are you using LEDs or incandescent bulbs? What questions do you have? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Joe Gatewood here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing electrical issues and wiring as part of our Ask a Contractor series on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I know my limits for sure, and I always defer electrical issues to the pros. But we can always pick up some basic maintenance and troubleshooting tips. Are you rewiring, bringing your home up to code? Join in with your questions. We have electrician Joe Gatewood helping us out on all things electrical this hour. Let's go to Jeff in Superior. Hi, Jeff. What's going on?
Hi, good morning. I have a question about these businesses that want to switch from whatever lighting they have, fluorescent or incandescent. They can switch to LED and they would receive a rebate from, I think it was from the state of Wisconsin or from the utility, I don't know. Because if they install LED lighting, it's a less of a draw on the electrical supply. And so there's a promotion, you know, to an incentive for businesses to switch to LED. And I wondered if that extended to residents or is that no longer a program?
Yeah. So any insights there on rebates for using LED lighting, Joe?
Sure do. Yes, there are huge incentives out there because the global population isn't declining. It's only going up. The demand for electricity goes up in about the same ratio. Power companies are feeling that pressure in the amount of electricity they need to supply to the grid. Municipalities, counties and states do offer different programs, and it will differ from city to city, county to county. First, the best way to check in on what program is available is to call the power company that's serving you. They will let you know residentially, commercially, or industrially how much they will kick back per kilowatt that is saved when converting or retrofitting to LED. Like I had stated at the beginning of the show, LEDs consume about 1/7 of what the traditional high-intensity discharge lights, fluorescents, incandescents, etc., would draw. And in my immediate area, our local electrical municipality does offer residential rebates,
mm-hmm.
50 cents, might be 50 cents per light bulb. In a commercial area, it could be even greater. And there's usually a form that has to be filled out stating what type of lighting was taken out of the building, added up in watts, and what it will be replaced with, also stated in watts with LED. And the difference between those two wattage levels will be what's used to calculate the rebate.
All right, Jeff, thanks for that question. Brian now in Waukesha. Brian, hi.
Hi, good morning. I just had a really quick question. I've heard there are devices that can help prevent electrical fires in a home called arc fault circuit interrupters, and I wanted to learn a little bit more about those, if I could.
Yes, excellent question. There's been a lot of progress made in the last 25 years since arc fault circuit interrupter protection has been made available and has been made mandatory in the residence. Other than solar photovoltaic systems or solar panel systems, there isn't a requirement for arc fault protection other than in the dwelling. This is usually provided by the circuit breaker, and instead of a $7 traditional circuit breaker, it's about a $65 circuit breaker that has a printed circuit board inside of it, and it sniffs out the characteristics of an unstable sine wave on an electrical circuit, indicating that there could be an arc. Now, there's two types of arcs that occur that can cause a glowing red ignition source or a sparking ignition source in the house's wiring, and those are series arc faults or parallel arc faults, depending on what type of arcing event is occurring. These had some controversy when they first came into our national electrical code as a requirement, but the engineering has smoothed out over the years, and it is a very viable fire-reducing mechanism.
And so that primarily is what that is to stop an electrical fire before it starts.
Absolutely, that's correct. Typical circuit breakers protect in two ways. They protect against overload and against short circuit. With this new dimension of arc fault protection, in addition to the overcurrent and short circuit protection, they offer series arc protection and parallel arc protection.
All right, Brian, thank you for that question. BJ from Hudson wants to explore LED lights more. BJ, I understand your LED lights are flickering?
Yes, I'll turn them on. They'll be on for about 10 minutes. They start to flicker, and then they'll go out. And then a little while later, they'll turn back on, and I'm not touching the switch or anything else. And they were fine for the first 4 years. I wasn't having any problems. And it's not just in our kitchen, but also in our bathroom, the same thing is happening.
Hmm. Joe, any insights? What could be going on?
I sure do. Since LEDs have become such a fantastic technology, everyone wants to get in on the race and take a piece of the bread. There are good and there are bad LEDs. The phenomena that you're experiencing with the flickering, probably coming from a bad LED, could be just a bad date of manufacturing, or someone was rushing to get their product out onto the shelves for sale. And when we see a house get retrofitted, maybe someone walks down to a big box store and buys a dozen new light bulbs. They'll feed off of each other along the same circuit. So say you're down in the basement and you have replaced several incandescent light bulbs with LEDs. When one bulb flickers, they might all flicker. We've seen that several times, and it's kind of bad news. We tell the customer that, well, we've got to go out and buy another set of different light bulbs, maybe a little higher quality that has a good track record, and we can get rid of that nuisance.
Typically, how long should your LEDs last?
Oh, man. 20,000 hours is probably the smallest claim that I've seen for an LED to last. Commercial LEDs can last up to 100,000 hours. And depending on the quality and the manufacturer's track record, we usually see something around the 50,000-hour mark.
Wow. We're getting help on electrical in this installment of Ask a Contractor series. Joe Gatewood, past president of the Electric Association in Minnesota. Randy now in Waukesha. Hi, Randy. What is your question?
Good morning. I'm just wondering what's the best way to hook up a portable generator to a house to run certain circuits, and I have my own well and septic. I know there's a panel that can be put in.
Topic.
I heard you say a fun topic, Joe.
Yes, fun topic, Randy. Back around 1999, when the world thought that the Earth would cave in because of Y2K, we installed more generator circuits than we have lately. And they range from 120-volt, 20-amp simple circuits to keep the furnace going in an outage, all the way up to whole house, 20 kW or 20,000 kilowatts of power. Depending on the amount of money you want to spend on it, you can serve your whole house with a backup generator, and every circuit can be energized during an outage. It does get to be a little impractical price-wise, but if money's not an object, it can be achieved. Most times we see, maybe a 10-kilowatt generator backing up a house manually started. So in the case of a power outage, you'd have to go outside, pull start the generator to get it operating, plug in some power cords to the house, and there'll be a manual transferring switch activated. You'll have to go turn the electrical power off to the house at its main switch, turning on the transfer switch, which, after talking with your electrician, would re-energize from the backup generator the certain circuits that you need to have thriving during an outage. That would be the refrigerator and freezer circuits, of course, keep things from thawing out. The furnace, probably not the air conditioner because that is such a huge draw on an electrical system and a larger generator would be needed. And maybe a bank or two of lights so you can see around the house. And don't forget the microwave.
Randy, does that help?
It does. I'm just wondering if you could give me a ballpark figure. I have a 6,200-watt generator.
6,200-watt generator, you might be able to pull three 20-amp circuits off of that at 120/240 volts if your generator does offer 120 and 240 volts.
All right, Randy, thank you so much for those questions. Joe Gatewood with us, former president of the Electric Association in Minnesota, fielding your questions on electrical work. Do you have a lack of outlets in a kitchen or bath? Do you want help installing new outlets? What electrical issue surfaced for you in the pandemic? How have you addressed it? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Joe Gatewood after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking with the electrician as part of our Ask a Contractor series on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You know, we realize just how much more electricity we use when everyone is at home, Zooming, making tea and coffee, kids playing video games, running the dishwasher, running the clothes dryer. Electrician Joe Gatewood is with us for the hour, tackling your electrical issues. Let's go back to the phones now. Joe is joining us from La Crosse. Joe, what's your issue?
Hi, I am in a small camper at a Western Wisconsin campground, and we have noticed that in the kitchen area, there are three plug-ins that we normally use that are not working now. I have flipped the breakers, and that doesn't seem to help. I'm guessing maybe a mouse or something has chewed a wire. What is your take on this? The other lights work, and the other plug-ins work in the other end of the camper.
Everything else being normal. Joe?
Well, kitchen receptacles are mandatorily protected by ground fault circuit interrupters, usually in the form of a GFCI receptacle. That's the rectangular device in countertops, above countertops, in kitchens, bathrooms, basements, outdoors, and campgrounds. It's the rectangular receptacle that has the little push buttons on it, test and reset. That is a life-saving technology inside of that receptacle to open a circuit or turn it off automatically if that receptacle senses electricity going somewhere it's not supposed to be, which could mean through a human. Testing those weekly or monthly for sure is a very good idea. That's a $20 receptacle. That's a $20 life insurance policy. They do go bad, however, because they operate 24 hours a day with or without anything plugged into that circuit. They have a surveillance mechanism built into them. They're always on guard, so they're always working, drawing a little bit of electricity just to monitor. You might want to check that ground fault circuit interrupter. You might also want to check the fuses that are inside of the RV. Fuses do trip for safety's sake. And lastly, yes, a mouse has been known to get in the way and interfere. And also, sometimes I've seen inside of RVs or campers that the receptacles are terminated with wires backstabbing into the receptacle, which is just a straight line piece of wire poked into a hole that receives the wire in the back of a receptacle or plug-in. Instead of having a shepherd's hook or crook bent into the wire and the wire tightened underneath the terminal screws clockwise. So there's many things that could be happening here.
All right. A number of things that could be going on, Joe. Thank you for that call. Bill now from West Salem. Bill, lighting problems in your spare bedroom, I understand.
Yeah, correct. I have four of the recessed receptacles. Recently, one had went out. So, you know, easy fix, screwed a bulb in, didn't go, tried another bulb, thought maybe I had a bad bulb, pulled the receptacle down with the bulb in the socket. The other three went out. Then when I pushed the receptacle I was working on back up into the holder, That went out and the other three went on. And I've been chasing this for an hour and I can't figure it out.
Oh, goodness. All right, Bill, thank you. What's going on there, Joe?
Each recessed lighting fixture, or sometimes referred to as a recessed can, has a junction box on it that's hidden up in the attic above the ceiling. It sounds to me that there's a loose termination or the twisting of the wires, maybe the untwisting of the wires in there. And when you jostle that circuit around, the wires are making and breaking the contact with each other, breaking off continuity, and making the lights dance around.
So what does that junction box allow you to do, and where do you see it in a home?
While this room was being wired, it was so easy to access that junction box, and since the sheetrock went on, the junction box is now no longer readily accessible, but it is still accessible. Mm. Small quarter-inch nut driver can be used to, from the underside of the ceiling, small quarter-inch nut driver can be used to remove the three screws that hold that recessed can in place, then it can drop down into the room area, giving you access in the attic without having to go up in the attic yourself. The junction box has a cover on each, the front and back side, for what does seem like a little bit of appropriate area for working. It's not a comfortable fix, but it can be done.
Bill, does that help?
It sure does. Do you think, Joe, that it's probably the receptacle I'm addressing, or could it be another one?
Well, since more than one light was affected by the one lighting fixture or socket that you were dancing, playing with, making the other lights dance, I think that there's a loose connection in the junction box of the one that you were working in.
Super. Thank you so much. I appreciate the answers.
Bill, thank you
Turn
for
the power
the call.
Up. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck is parting words there. Let's go to Louise now from Viroqua. Hi, Louise.
Hi. I'm wondering how you find good LED light bulbs, because we have had 8 of them go in a year and a half. So we're filling up the landfill with LED bulbs, and our incandescents last way longer. So is there a way that we can find good LED bulbs? They're supposed to last 20 years, I think. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, that's a rough streak there, Joe.
I had mentioned earlier that there are good and there are bad qualities of LEDs. There's a lot of players in the game. Everyone wants to reach the finish line, which means profit. Talking to a reputable contractor, he can guide you toward the better LEDs, not ones that might be sold off the shelves of a big box store. I'm not putting the big boxes down. They do have good quality bulbs, LEDs, but it's up to the consumer, the shopper, to figure out which ones are the best. Well, even the person working in the aisles of those stores might have limited knowledge on the quality of the bulbs and the reputation of the manufacturer.
Yeah, so you definitely do your homework as we get help on electrical in this installment of Ask the Contractor series. Joe Gatewood, past president of the Electric Association in Minnesota, taking your questions, your electrical projects, and what you've encountered as you work through your house, 800-642-1234. Jerry is joining us from Campbellsport. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, good morning. Joe, earlier you got a question from somebody about breakers, and the topic of AFCIs versus normal breaker came up. And you had mentioned something, I don't know if it was the radio or something that interrupted a comment you made about solar panel installations. Back in the end of 2018, I installed a solar panel array at my residence that's grid-tied, and the breaker used to connect into the panel really wasn't brought up. It is grid tied before it reached my panel, so I didn't know if there's something that I had maybe overlooked. It does have an AC disconnect and, you know, all the other stuff. Is there something I was overlooking, or am I in decent shape to leave it as it is?
If you had a contractor install it for you, chances are very good that AFCI protection was installed on the individual circuits that the arrays produce to head toward the inverter. This is so that if an arc were to happen during daylight hours when the sun is producing electricity on your solar array, that arc would be squelched or extinguished from the arc fault circuit interrupting breaker.
Does that make sense, Jerry?
Yep, that makes sense. And then actually, now that I'm thinking about it, so it is tied into the grid before it goes into my panel, and there is a fuse box with the AC disconnect. So that's probably what it is. And I'm, you know, faulty memory and thinking where it's tied into. So I think I'm fairly certain we're safe, but it just jogged my memory. I was like, I don't have that. So just wanted to call and see.
Yeah, Jerry, thank you. What are some pointers you have, Joe, for installing solar panels and the electricity that is provided?
Well, like any other renewable energy source, there are strict mandates for the installation of them, not just the physical mandate like installing a solar array on your roof, which might damage your roof and lead to leaking. The electrical portion is very critical. Since we have a limited amount of sunlight each day in Minnesota and Wisconsin, upper Midwest, these solar panels are going to produce electricity like crazy when the sun is out. But they don't produce electricity at night. So during the day, when the electricity is being produced by the solar array, we want to make sure that it doesn't overload or overheat because it can still cause a fire. And it won't extinguish itself until the sun goes down. So the proper arc fault protection on those circuits, as well as the regular short circuit and overload protection, has to be chosen wisely, accurately, and meeting the bare minimum requirements of the National Electrical Code. The best way to obtain that knowledge is to talk to a solar contractor. Not every electrical contractor is solar qualified, and there are other companies that make it their sole purpose to install accurately these solar systems.
Make sure it's a specialist. Let's go to Susan now from Camp Douglas. Hi, Susan. What are you encountering?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have two coach lights on the wall on my stairs going downstairs, one at the top of the stairs, one at the bottom. And when I flip the light switch on to turn them on, I can hear like a low humming noise. The lights aren't flickering. There's no, you know, electrical smell, anything. I don't know if that's just, I don't know if it's something to be concerned about or it's just the way those particular lights are. You know, they're not halogen lights or anything where I would expect a hum.
And that hum stays on when those lights are on. Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't stand in the stairway.
Uh-huh.
That I'm not sure. It may actually go away. I haven't paid enough. I know I notice it right when I turn the light on.
Yeah. So, Joe, what might be going on there?
Well, since you're on a stairway, I would be safe to assume that there's not a dimmer switch on this three-way.
Oh, I think we just... Joe, are you still there? I think we just lost our connection with Joe Gatewood as we get at your questions about electrical this hour of the morning show as our part of our Ask a Contractor series. We, I think we just disconnected with Joe Gatewood, but we will be back in just a minute here as we take more of your electrical questions. Stay with us. There's more to come here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As part of our Ask a Contractor series, we're focused on electrical. We have electrician Joe Gatewood on the line here with us for about 9 more minutes. Joe, getting back to Susan's humming on the stairwell, what might that be coming from?
Well, it could be some of the types of lighting bulbs that she's using. There are still compact fluorescents that are in use that can make a little bit of a humming noise because there's a a ballast inside of a fluorescent fixture that changes the voltage from 120-volt household power to the workable fluorescent voltage. In that transformation of voltage, there can be a hum. If there were to be a dimmer on this switching system, some dimmers don't jive, or they're not compatible with the type of lighting or artificial lighting. So say an incandescent-rated dimmer will hum if it has fluorescent light bulbs or LED light bulbs installed on the light. And in the reverse fashion, if we have an LED-rated dimmer trying to dim down incandescent or fluorescent lights, there will be a hum and some confusion between the technologies there.
Mm-hmm.
And the derivative there is a humming reaction.
What about installing a dimmer switch for a light fixture? Is that something we can do ourselves?
Absolutely. And that's a great question, because LEDs, which are the popular choice for artificial lighting in any house or commercial setting, have to have an LED-rated dimmer, because LED is an electronic style of light, not a resistive style of light.
Mm-hmm.
We need an electronic dimmer. So if you have an existing dimmer in your house and you're wanting to upgrade to LED lights, make sure that you change out the dimmer too. It is possible. There are instructions with purchase of every dimmer. Make sure you turn the power off at the circuit breaker and follow the instructions, or you can call a reputable electrician.
How about converting an overhead ceiling light into a recessed light, you know, a fixture that can be installed directly inside a ceiling or a wall? How difficult is that?
The box that is in the ceiling or the wall has to be able to accommodate the diode or the light-emitting diode. Small 3-inch round boxes, which are very common in the ceilings and walls, might not be a candidate for a recessed light, but it could be a candidate for a disc light, which has the appearance of a recessed light, but it truly is not recessed
mm-hmm.
into the ceiling cavity or the wall cavity. There are alternatives of LEDs that can look like recessed lights, but the box in the ceiling and the wall sets the tone.
All right. Well, Connie now in Green Bay is on the line with a question. Connie, hi.
Hi there.
What would you like to ask Joe?
Okay. I have a bedroom outlet that has three, where you can plug in three different things. All were working. And then one day, two work, but the one on the top does not work. What could be the problem here?
Are there ceiling lights in that room?
Yes, there is. Ceiling. One light that's attached to a fan.
Okay, so when you walk into the room, there's probably one switch on the wall to control that ceiling light, correct?
Yeah, I guess so here. One that goes to my closet and one, I just don't know. I can't remember here. Okay.
Sounds
there
like
is a,
yeah.
I got an outlet here. It's not an outlet. It's a one that I can push. That does the ceiling. The other, I have another switch where it's two switches. One goes for the closet and one goes for the probably the switch that's not working.
In some older homes, a wall switch would be used to control a portion of a wall receptacle or plug-in. The inclusion of a table lamp. So when you walk into a room, you could turn one switch on for the ceiling light, another switch on to turn on a portion of the wall receptacle, which would turn on a lamp. That could be sometimes confused as a receptacle that's not working. But since you state that you have three ports, three receptacles on one box on the wall, it sounds to me like that is a DESBARD switch installation where, in years ago, probably 40, 50 years ago, they were popular to create your own switch and receptacle arrangement. The metal yoke that was used to fasten the receptacles and switches to the wall could have choices made of switches or receptacles, and they were interchangeable.
Mm.
And the connections between the two or the three can oftentimes fail, especially over time and with heavy usage. So it would be best to turn power off to that circuit and either call an electrician to take a look at it for you, but make sure the power is off. And if you want to risk it and take it apart yourself, you might be able to visually see the disconnection of that top receptacle.
Connie, thank you for that call. You know, I'm wondering, Joe, you talk about bringing electrical up to code and homes that, you know, even have fuse boxes, earlier years, antiquated wiring. What does it mean to bring a house up to code, and does code change a lot?
Ooh, got a lot of answers for that one. I certainly do. The word you used accurately was antiquated. An older home has antique wires in it. And the old style, rubber-coated, cloth-covered wire has aged along with the house, and that rubber coating, cloth covering becomes brittle. And any slight movement or bumping into those wires causes that brittle rubber to shake off, exposing the copper or aluminum conductor inside. Now, that becomes a fire and an electrocution hazard. Mm. Our National Electrical Code is 124 years old. It has been revised 55 times, or typically every 3 years, to compensate for new technologies and for more safety. Electricity still does cause fires and still does electrocute. And so any circuit that is going to be extended or modified, these are existing circuits, has to be brought up to code, meaning it has to have a proper equipment grounding conductor in it, and it has to have the right overcurrent protection from the fuse or circuit breaker on it. And a consultation with an electrical contractor would be eye-opening to anyone who wants to add on, remodel, upgrade, or retrofit.
Okay. Let's quickly get here to Lindsay in DeSoto, who's a teacher. Lindsay, go ahead.
Oh, I wish I were a teacher, but I'm actually in administration. But
oh, okay.
I am so excited to listen to this because you're absolutely fascinating, the diversity of topics you can cover. We have tech ed classes. We're a rural school. Our kids do a lot of farm work. They do a lot of work on just about everything. And so our tech ed classes are full. And I'm wondering if Joe would be a guest at our school because we teach life skills. We teach household maintenance. And, of course, they get a little bit of everything from plumbing to electrical.
Oh, yeah.
Joe would consider this.
Joe, does the association get out or do you get out to classrooms?
Certainly do. And every chance I get to go to Wisconsin, I take. Because although I'm a Vikings fan, I still have a piece of in my heart for Wisconsin. In fact, I just returned from Wisconsin on vacation.
Oh, dear. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time.
Joe Gatewood, owner of Gatewood Electric in Willmar, Minnesota. We won't fault him for that. Past president of the Minnesota Electric Association. And be sure to join us every week for Ask a Contractor series. You can find more about the series at WPR.org/contractor. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.